Let's talk about the pardons yesterday from former President Biden, who had several pardons before he left office, to, as we mentioned, President Trump with those pardons yesterday. What did you make of the number of pardons we saw by both administrations?
You know, it's a reminder that a lot of things that a president wants to get through, he has to get working through Congress. But there's certain things that presidents can just do with a stroke of a pen. And the pardon is just the leading example of that. It is an unchecked power. It is fully just determined by what a president wants to do. You saw the outgoing president determine that he was going to shield a number of people from possible prosecution. And then you saw the incoming president follow through on his promise from the campaign that he would pardon and commute nearly all of the January 6th participants. And so it's a reminder of the sheer power that presidents wield. And we saw that on display, the bookend, the outgoing president and the incoming president. So pardons were a clear story of yesterday.
Outside of the pardons, a lot of executive orders signed by the new president yesterday. What did you make of those executive orders Mr. Trump put into place?
So, again, none of those were overly surprising for those of us who have been following the campaign and listening to Trump's pronouncements on the campaign. We should say several things about these executive orders. First of all, there are limits to what a president can do through executive order. It is not possible for a president to displace Congress and simply say, I'm going to make policy through executive orders. So there are limits to what that can be done. There are, though, things that a president can do. A president can direct the members of his administration, I want you to take these actions. I want you to study this. I can declare emergencies, and that allows me more freedom in regard to the border. I'll just mention one thing where there's going to be clear limits. The president said yesterday in executive order that he would eliminate birthright citizenship. That is the ability for, actually, that people who are born in the U.S. become citizens. That is going to be a true test of whether or not a president can do that on his own. There's a lot of case law that's to be worked through. My point is presidents are powerful through executive orders, but there are also limits to what they can achieve.
Probably some constitutional challenges to that executive order coming, I would imagine.
We have already started to see challenges come to several of those executive orders, and those will continue, and those will work their way through the courts.
So since President Trump was elected yesterday, we're going to look ahead to 2028 since he was sworn in, and we're already looking ahead. I'm curious, the two parties, as we look to the 2028 election, who are the leading candidates of these two parties to become the rising stars or the next leaders of these parties?
I would say that the 2028 nominations promise to be more open, less determined at this point in time, at least, than anything that we've seen in recent decades. That is, we know, on assuming office, that President Trump cannot succeed himself. So we know that we will have an open seat contest. The Republican Party, you always first look to a vice president who is possible, and so all eyes will be on J.D. Vance, but all eyes will be on a number of other governors and contestants for that Republican nomination. Likewise with the Democratic nomination, it is certainly possible that our first look will be at Kamala Harris, since she was the outgoing vice president and candidate. But there are, once again, a lot of other contestants, governors of Florida, of Michigan, of Pennsylvania, who will all be vying for that. So I would say this is about the most open contest looking ahead to 2028 than we've seen in a while.
Marco Rubio, in his Senate confirmation yesterday, confirmed unanimously. No real surprise there, right? As the senator from Florida is now going to lead the Secretary of State, right?
That's exactly right. There are some Trump nominees which we expected to be not going further very far, and Matt Gaetz, initial appointee for Attorney General, was one of those. We expected that not to go very far. There's others we expected to be about as easy of a glide path as possible, and Marco Rubio for Secretary of State was about as easy of a glide path as possible. And then there's some others that are going to likely make it through, but it's going to be a very close vote, for instance, for Secretary of Defense, for some other positions. But Marco Rubio, a sitting senator well acclaimed by his colleagues, was approved without a dissenting vote.
Visiting with Dr. John Dinan, Wake Forest political science professor. Looking a little closer to home, the General Assembly returns to Jones Street this week, or later this month, I should say. Biggest things you're looking at as this session of the General Assembly gets underway?
So I just start with first of all, it's a budget year, and so that the main focus will be on crafting a budget for the next 2 years. But when we think of a budget, we might think of taxes taken in, money spent out. But budgets are also policy documents. That's where you put in a lot of policy changes. And so the all focus is going to be on the budget. The next focus is going to be, naturally, Republicans control the Senate by a supermajority. They lack supermajority control of the House by a single seat. And so the question is, given that dynamics, do Republicans and the Democratic governor, do they engage in negotiation to try to work out a bipartisan compromise where both sides get something? Or do Republicans try to go it alone and try to find one or two or several Democratic House members to work with on the budget, to promise them some things, and then hope that they can just go it alone and overcome a governor's veto? That's the main thing that we're watching in the state legislature right now. We could go either ways. We could have bipartisan deal-making, or we could have what we've had for the most of the last decade, and that is Republicans trying to draw a budget without really much influence from the governor.
As I let you go, there is a new Speaker of the House and Representative Destin Hall. I'm curious the dynamic on Jones Street now with the new Speaker and Representative Hall after Tim Moore has joined North Carolina's congressional delegation.
You know, so much of legislating these days is personal-driven and it's leadership-driven. And leaders of the House and Senate can set priorities about what they want to emphasize, what they want to go forward. We don't have a sense right now of major discontinuity between old Speaker Moore and new Speaker Hall, but we will be on the lookout to see what deals does Speaker Hall want to commit? What legislation does he want to go forward? We know in the Senate, Senator Berger, there's continuity in there, continuity for the last 14 years. We have a new face in the speakership, and all eyes will be looking, what are his priorities? What does he want to move forward quickly or not at all?
Dr. John Dinan, Wake Forest political science professor. Dr. Dinan, thanks so much for the time and the perspective. Look forward to visiting again with you very soon.
Good to be here, as always.